Well, good afternoon, folks. I'm delighted to be here on this beautiful day, and I'm particularly pleased to be with my friend Sam Brownback. You know, we often sit together. We serve on the same two committees, on the Judiciary Committee and on the the Foreign Relations Committee and the Judiciary Committee. And we often don't agree. On many things in this presidential campaign, Sam and I, I'm sure, disagree. But one thing we agree on is that the solution to our situation in Iraq is, quite frankly, more important than who among us will be the next president of the United States of America. It is like the boulder sitting in the middle of the road. Until we can remove this boulder, until we can get it straight in Iraq, we're going to have great difficulty reestablishing our credibility around the world and, quite frankly, our flexibility at home to deal with many of the domestic issues we both agree and disagree on. Sam and I are really here. We're delighted to give you a preview in the general election. That's the reason we're here. I think Republican side, it looks like Brownback to me. I don't know. But more seriously, we're here to make a point. And that is that despite the partisan divide in Washington, D.C., we've come together, not as Democrats or a Republican, but as Americans, to again address the single most urgent problem facing us today. That's what Senator Brownback and I did 2 weeks ago in the United States Senate, although we started collaborating on this much longer ago than 2 weeks ago. Our resolution, which says that the United States should work with the international community and the Iraqi leaders to support a political settlement in Iraq, based on federalism, won the support of 75 of our colleagues, left, right, and center. It's interesting, the name of the whole resolution is Biden, Brownback, Boxer, and who's the fourth, the Republican, and another Republican. But it covers the gambit ideologically in the United States Senate. For the first time in this incredibly divisive national debate we've been having about Iraq, a bipartisan majority of United States senators voted to change course. For the first time, in my view, there is real hope, genuine hope, that we can put together a circumstance whereby we can leave Iraq and leave it without leaving chaos behind. The support we won, I believe, reflects this reality. That is, there is no military solution in Iraq. Everyone today says that, from the President of the United States down to every candidate running for president in both parties. There is no military solution in Iraq, only a political solution. But quite frankly, up till now, that has begged the question, what political solution? Sam and I, together with Senator Boxer and senators from, as I said, the left, right, and center of the political spectrum, we offered a political solution. Our solution is designed to help bring life to what has already been in the Iraqi Constitution. The Iraqi Constitution calls for, and I quote, a decentralized federal system that gives the people local control over the fabric of their daily lives, including their physical security, their jobs, education, government services. A limited central government would be responsible for protecting Iraq's borders and distributing oil revenues and for coinage. The strong support we won in the United States Senate a little while ago is powerful evidence, in my view, that a bipartisan majority disagrees with the present strategy, which has been to try to establish a strong, central, united government in Baghdad that had the support of all the warring factions. As a matter of fact, the rationale, both from the left and the right up to now, has been to accomplish that goal. The president has said we're going to surge troops. For what reason? To give breathing room. For what reason? So a strong central government could emerge with Sunni, Shia, and Kurds getting together. Some of the left have argued we should withdraw troops. For what purpose? In order to make the reality come clear to all the Iraqis that they have to get together, Sunni, Shia, and Kurds, and form a strong central government in Iraq. The fact of the matter is that neither of those things have happened, neither of those approaches has worked, And, quite frankly, a strong central government in Baghdad is not going to emerge. It will not happen. For there is no trust within the government in Baghdad, no trust of the government by the people, no capacity on the part of the government to deliver basic security or services, and no prospect that the central Baghdad government will develop that trust or capacity anytime soon. Simply put, absent an occupation that we cannot sustain or a dictator we cannot support, Iraq cannot be governed from the center at this point in their history. Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds are just not prepared to entrust their futures to one another at this moment in history. After our amendment passed, there was a lot of misinformation about it in Iraq and in this country and around the world. It was a consequence of people not either having not read the amendment or having deliberately set up a straw man to distort it. Unfortunately, the administration added fuel to this fire instead of dousing the fire by rebroadcasting mischaracterizations. And the primary mischaracterization was that we were calling for the partitioning of Iraq, splitting it into three separate countries. That is not on the table. That was no part of the amendment. It was no part of the discussion. And it is not envisioned at all. As a matter of fact, I think it's important I state very bluntly what the amendment did and what federalism is. Federalism is not a U.S. or a foreign imposition upon Iraq. Federalism is in their constitution. As I will repeat again, that constitution says, and I quote, Iraq is a decentralized federal system, end of quote. And the Iraqi constitution set out extensively in Articles 114 through 118, sets out extensively the powers that are granted to the regions as well as the limited powers granted to the central government. Iraq's parliament last summer passed implementing legislation to put these provisions of allowing regions to come into being into play. It called for 18 months in which for this transition to take place. It will take effect next year. The reason it provided for time is to give the remaining concerns of the Iraqis' major groups time to work them out, such as the distribution of oil, such as the distribution of authority. These compromises, though, among the Iraqis will not happen by themselves. They're at war. The only way they're going to happen is with the help of the United States of America and the international community. They will not happen by themselves or organically through, as what's being discussed now, some piecemeal, bottom-up approach to peace in Iraq. The Iraqis need our help to bring this common vision for a future to life. And how that we bring it to life is why we call for in our amendment, calling for the international community to take ownership of this. I will digress just for a moment to point out that about, I guess now 8 weeks ago, as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, I asked to meet, Sam was unable to be there, I asked to meet with the permanent five of the United Nations, the five ambassadors, including our own. I laid out this plan and asked whether or not if our government asked them to participate in calling an international conference, would they do it? Every single solitary ambassador representing the permanent five of the United Nations said, absolutely. As a matter of fact, one who will remain nameless said, the first thing I'd say, Mr. President, what took you so long to ask? So the point is, we are pushing on an open door here. We're pushing on what the Iraqi constitution calls for. But remember, there are thousands of people dead. Carnage still is reigning. A civil war is there. The idea the Iraqis are spontaneously going to come and put this together is not realistic. Federalism, second point, federalism will not accelerate sectarian cleansing. Quite frankly, it's the only way to stop sectarian cleansing. The Iraqis are already voting with their feet. More than 4 million Iraqis have fled their homes and their neighborhoods, either leaving the country or self-exile within their country in areas where they feel more secure. Unless Iraqis come up with some kind of arrangement for power sharing peacefully, this cleansing is going to continue. 500,000 American troops cannot settle this issue. The Iraqis have to decide there is a means by which they can get together, justifying them ending their civil war. Once Iraqis actually read what we wrote, they support it. We put together some commentary from President Talabani, Prime Minister Maliki, and other leaders who I think we've handed out, or they're at the tables out front. It is a misconception that the Iraqis do not support this proposal. They do not support partitioning. When it was defined as partitioning, they immediately responded. After each of us contacted those leaders, in many cases personally and or through written communications, the entire mood changed. Speaking just for myself and not for Sam, I believe we need, and I have long proposed, a comprehensive strategy to end the war responsibly. In addition to this political settlement, I believe we should bring our troops home now by transitioning their mission to a much more limited and achievable task, like fighting Al-Qaeda and training the Iraqis. We should make a commitment as well to protect our troops and the readiness of our military with the right amount of home leave before we send people back, and by providing our troops in theater with every single solitary bit of protection which is in our capacity to provide, such as mine-resistant vehicles. 73% of all the injuries and all the deaths are caused by roadside bombs and EFPs, those things you see on television that they use, essentially a big PCV pipe and this copper projectile that gets blown through and can penetrate the side of our vehicles. We have the ability, and we're now building these vehicles, to replace the vehicles our troops are riding in, and we know it will increase their life expectancy from 60% to 80% if they're in those vehicles. And we should do everything we can to make sure that we leave something stable behind so that our interests in the region are not endangered for a generation. I believe that's what our amendment does. In closing, I want to thank my partner in this effort, Sam Brownback. We are proof, in my view, that changing the direction of Iraqi policy does not need to be a partisan issue. To those who disagree with the solution we put forward, but acknowledge the need for a political solution in Iraq, my question is very simple. What's your alternative? Thank you very much, and I'd like to yield to my friend, Senator Brownback.
Thanks, Joe. It's a pleasure to join you. I like these little short three-letter names, Joe, Sam. I think they sound very presidential to be able to have those. Beautiful day here in Iowa, and I can't think of a better place to do something like this than in Des Moines, and to talk about one of the key issues of our day, and to do so on a bipartisan basis, and to show the country that the government can work, and that we can work together, and that we can work together on tough topics, and that we can get them done. As one of the things that I've been seeing as much as anything in this presidential cycle, and I heard it yesterday on a call-in show I was doing, is a lady just saying, you know, I've never been so hopeless as I am right now. It just doesn't seem like we can come together on anything. It just seems like we're fighting and bickering on everything. And I thought that she hit a chord of what I've heard from a number of people, that we just don't seem to come together on anything. And I told her then, well, stay tuned. Tomorrow, Joe Biden and I are going to talk about a big topic, and we're going to come together on it. Now, I said, you may want to check and make sure the sun comes up the next day and see if the world doesn't fall apart or what the case might be. But we can do this. I'm delighted to join with Joe on this. He's a very serious individual, is a gentleman, one of the lead foreign policy people certainly in the Congress and of our times, and has been on Foreign Relations Committee for many years, has done a lot of great work, and knows the world well. What I call this is a political surge. We've had a military surge. There have been questions about the military surge. I think the military surge has proved some effectiveness. But all the military can give you is space for the political to work. And so now we need a political surge. And that's not my term. That's Thomas Friedman's term, that we need a political surge. That's what this represents, is a political surge forward. I'd like to see us push for the factions to come together. I'm urging the administration to send somebody like James Baker, somebody else of stature, to go over and to push the parties to move forward with a federalism approach, similar to what we did in the Dayton Accords and in Bosnia. If we're going to make the recent military progress count, we have to have political progress. The time has come for a new kind of surge. Not only do I think we can agree that we need a political surge in Iraq, I believe that we can come together on a political solution for Iraq. And that's what we're talking about with this. And we can sum up this policy in one term. And that term's a term very familiar to Americans, and it's the term federalism, where you devolve power and authority out to the states and out to the regions. We're familiar with the benefits of federalism. Federalism means moving that power and authority out to the regions. It's something that can work in Iraq. And I think it particularly works in Iraq, recognizing the history of that region and the history of that country. To the media that's here, and I think we also have some of these at the tables, one of the most persuasive documents I've shown my colleagues to get them on board with this proposal were a series of maps. And they were maps from 1914 in the region then referred to as Mesopotamia, in the region governed by, dominated by the Ottomans. I hold one of them up to you right now in that you can see the outline of today's Iraq in it. And you can see under the Ottoman dictatorship in that region, you had a north, they called them vilayets, we would call them states, Kurdish state. They had a center Sunni state, and they had a southern Shia state or vilayet. They broke it up into three regions, recognizing the demographic realities of that day. It's interesting to me that while you could look at it differently today, this is the demographic reality. Some people are saying, well, yes, but there's a lot of mixture and mixing that's taking place over those years. That is true between Sunni and Shia. And yet now you are seeing, with the removal of Saddam Hussein, with groups going into their sectarian or ethnic grouping, you're seeing a sectarian cleansing taking place. And here I just want to flash up in front of you, again, it's in the handout, the map of Baghdad, and this one is way too busy. But the point of it shows the movement, sectarian movement, that's taking place in Baghdad, of Sunni moving west of the Tigris River and Shia moving east. And we're seeing within Iraq about 6,000 people relocating a month inside of Iraq, generally along ethnic or sectarian lines. This is not something that we support. This is not something we're pushing. But this happens to be a reality on the ground in Iraq today. What Joe has pretty well described, what the proposal is, I want to quote the president of Iraq, President Talabani, as saying when I met with him last week about this proposal, when he endorsed the proposal. He said that federalism is a way to devolve power and authority to the regions in Iraq in order to hold it together. Federalism isn't a way of splitting Iraq apart. It's a way of holding Iraq together. And you've got to recognize, too, Iraq in many respects has evolved less as a country and more as three groups held together by exterior forces. The countries around them do not want to see this country split up. We don't want to see it split up. They're bound together in many respects by those forces, and they want to see themselves be able to work, but they can't work if you have a strong central authority where you push most of your power and authority there. It will work if you devolve the power and authority, and my best example for why that would work is the Kurdish North, where federalism is already at work, where most of the power and authority has already devolved to the Kurds. It is already in the Iraqi Constitution. I was there in January. Joe's probably been there several times. Matter of fact, I know Joe was there before Saddam Hussein was out of power. And what I saw in the Kurdish region of that country was investment, was general stability, were the Kurds running the region and allowing other groups to come in, even though it was still a Kurdish-run area, and the stability that we want to see for the rest of the country and the growth and development. This can work. It may be that the next step that this has to happen sequentially will be to give the Sunnis control of the West, where we've seen stability come in Anbar. It may be that you devolve power and authority, particularly to the Sunnis. And so it doesn't happen all at once, but it happens where a second region stabilizes, and that's in the Sunni region. Now, Joe and I would look differently at the military equation, possibly, maybe not, on down the road. I do think you're going to need to see U.S. troops there and in Iraq for some period of time. But I would note for you that if our people aren't getting killed, we can be in a place for a long period of time. We've been and still are in South Korea 60 years after the conflict. We're still in Bosnia nearly 15 years after entering into that Dayton Accords and the agreements there. And we need to be in Bosnia, because without that stability, I think the parties probably go back at each other. But we can be there if our people aren't getting shot and killed every day. And that's the key that's different. We've got to get our people in a position where they're not being shot and killed, and where you can get some stability for the Iraqi people that they can see their lives improve. Let me conclude on this point. This federalism, I believe, and this proposal we put forward, I fundamentally believe, will be the long-term status of Iraq. This is what's going to take place. It will have to happen by the Iraqis. The United States cannot and will not dictate this, and in our resolution, we don't dictate it. We say in working with the Iraqis are the ones that have to do it. But I fundamentally believe this is the ultimate status of what Iraq does. The question for me is how long and how many lives die in between? And I say, can't we head some of this off? Can't we have a political solution so not as many people die in the process? Can't we get to some stabilized form and recognize that this is the political reality of our day? Look at the former Yugoslavia. Tito governed it, heavy dictatorship. Once you blow the dictatorship, it's off. It's, what, six countries and two autonomous regions now after how many civil wars in between? A guy told me several years ago something I thought was pretty accurate, that if you see a straight line border in the Middle East or Africa, you ought to raise a question whether it whether it reflects demographic reality or not. And I thought that, what we've got to recognize in the world, that as dictators get lifted off of countries, you still have a demographic reality on the ground. And you need to work with people. You can try to force a different solution, but you're going to be using a heavy military to do that. You're going to be subjecting a lot of lives to peril or loss. We don't need to do that here. This can send a strong message that we take the political situation in Iraq seriously, that we believe a political solution is urgently necessary, and that a political solution is entirely consistent with the Iraqi Constitution, and that all of this is within reach. I hope we can agree on federalism as a way forward in Iraq. Throughout this year, I've kept emphasizing to people that we have to come together here in order to win over there. You can't sustain a war effort with one party for it and one party against it. This brings us together. We have a real opportunity to make federalism work as a political solution in Iraq and chart a path towards stability and political equilibrium. We have had a military surge. Here's an opportunity to launch, to sustain, and to win with a political surge. And I'm delighted to be able to join my colleague Joe Biden in putting this forward. Thank you.